It's TechBiter Worldwide with Bill Blinn. The latest on programs and policies, helpful hints, and a bit of occasional nonsense. All in more or less plain English.
Podcast number 899 for the 13th of September, 2024. This week, is there a best browser? Well, of course there is, but your best browser may not be my best browser. And my best browser today at noon may not be my best browser this afternoon at 3. What's best depends on a lot of variables. In short circuits, if paper sticky notes are all over your desk and computer, maybe it's time to switch to the electronic version. And there are benefits to having an email address that obscures your identity and can be abandoned as needed without affecting your primary address. The title of this segment is, Are You Using the Best Browser? Well, that's absurd. It's absurd because it implies that an answer exists. It doesn't. At least not if you're expecting a single answer. Finding the best browser isn't like solving a math problem. Multiplying 35 by 3 will always be 105. The square root of 625 will always be 25. Even those silly math puzzles that roil the internet because people don't recall how PEMDAS or BODMAS work have correct answers, that is, answers that abide by the generally accepted implementation of operations. If you check the website, you'll see I go completely off the rails in a section that's about PEMDAS and BODMAS. It is not essential to the topic of browsers, so I'm not going to use it in the podcast, and it will not be on the midterm or the final. When best is involved, my answer is almost always, it depends. And that's exactly what it is now. I could probably just stop right there, but that would make for an uncomfortably and uncommonly short article. So let's push on. The best browser is the one that works for the user in a way that's congruent with the user's desires. For me, that means Vivaldi. It was the best possible browser for me on the 21st of August, 2024, which is the day I started writing this segment. Vivaldi has been the best possible browser for me since 2022 or maybe 2021, but that doesn't mean some other browser hasn't been the best browser for me on some specific date when I was visiting one particular website. It doesn't mean that Vivaldi will be the best possible browser for me the day after you read this on the website or hear it on the podcast. What's important to understand is that a lot of browsers exist. Granted, with the exception of Firefox, most of them are based on Chrome, but based on doesn't mean identical to. Opening Chrome, Edge, and Vivaldi reveals a lot of differences. A Chevy Camaro and a Cadillac ATS are the same car with different trim levels. Look below the exterior, and you'll see that a Nissan 370Z and the Infiniti QX70 are the same basic car. Other examples include the Hyundai Entourage Kia Sedora, Ford Expedition Lincoln Navigator, and Toyota 4Runner Lexus GX470. But enough about cars. Firefox will differ a lot from any of the Chrome-based browsers, and of course there is Safari that runs on Apple devices and uses Apple's open-source browser engine WebKit, which is derived from KHTML. Beyond the big three, or the big five, there are lots of other browsers you can try. You'll find a link to Slant on the TechBiter Worldwide website with an article that lists 77. And What Is My Browser has more than 150. There's also a link to What Is My Browser. Some of those 150, though, have been discontinued. For most users, the right browser will be Chrome, Edge, Firefox, Opera, Safari on a Mac only, or Vivaldi. Others that might be worth considering include Brave, Ghostery, LibreWolf, which is based on Firefox, and WaterFox, also based on Firefox. Vivaldi is currently the right browser for me because it offers the largest number of configuration settings and plays well with Chrome extensions. I like configuration settings. I use a lot of extensions for added privacy and security, password management, annoyance removal, website development information, image searches, and bargain offers from my bank. The extensions would be available to any Chrome-based browser, so the primary selling point is the remarkable number of settings and customizations. Most of the settings are also available on Chrome somewhere, but they're not quite as easy to access. So far, I'm willing to live with Vivaldi's flaws, such as high memory use and occasional pages that simply stop working, requiring either that I reconnect to the site or restart the browser entirely. I also mentioned that it uses a lot of memory, but I have what is, by current standards, sufficient RAM. Other Chrome-based browsers have a lot of configuration settings. Chrome has its own basic settings page, but it doesn't include the array of settings found in Vivaldi. Advanced settings are revealed when the user types chrome:// flags in the address bar, and an even longer list of internal URLs, some of which are settings and some of which are informational, and some of which are games, by typing chrome:// about. These Chrome URLs are available in most, or probably all, Chrome-based browsers. Instead of chrome:// preface the URL with Vivaldi, Edge, or the name of whatever browser you're using. Or just use Chrome, and the browser will probably change it for you. You'll find a very long list of internal addresses on the TechBiter Worldwide website this week. Edge settings are similar to what's found in Chrome, but Microsoft, of course, has modified the user interface and the overall layout. All of the special Chrome URLs share Chrome's default code base, so they are exactly what someone who uses the standard version of Chrome will see. For perhaps the first time, Microsoft has a browser that's worth considering. Granted, it is built on Chrome, but it feels faster than Chrome. There are some useful features, including the ability to read a website aloud to you. Customization is good, but nowhere near as comprehensive as what Vivaldi offers. Even security and privacy have been boosted. Microsoft is building a lot of AI features into Edge that could be a plus or a minus, depending on your opinion of artificial intelligence. The only browser with significant differences for settings is Firefox. Of course, there's a standard settings page with all the expected options, but typing about:config in the address bar will trigger a warning. Proceed with caution, it says. Changing advanced configuration preferences can impact Firefox performance, or security. Well, when you click the Accept Risk and Continue button, you'll be presented with a gigantic list of settings that you can change. As the developers say, proceed with caution. Firefox is unlikely to win any speed competitions, and it has always consumed a lot of memory, but it has real protections against spyware built in, and it blocks most pop-ups. This can be a problem if you routinely use websites that depend on pop-up technology. Those sites won't work properly until you modify Firefox so that its blocking is deactivated on specific sites. There is, in my opinion, no best browser. That's why I have Chrome, Firefox, and Edge installed and configured in addition to Vivaldi. The best browser for any specific website will depend on the website and your opinion of how a browser should work. If you find these podcasts useful, and I hope you do, might you consider a donation? There are no ads here, and support from listeners is the sole source of income. It's easy. Just visit the website and click the donate button near the top of any page. You can make a one-time donation or schedule a repeating donation every month. I thank you. And so does the cat. In short circuits, Windows users may already keep information that once would have been relegated to a sticky note on the computer by using the Sticky Notes app. With the addition of sticky notes to OneNote, it's an even more compelling treat. In 1968, Spencer Silver was trying to develop a super strong adhesive. Instead, he created a low-tack, reusable, pressure-sensitive adhesive. Silver's employer, 3M, tried for 5 years to figure out what that might be good for. In 1974, Art Fry suggested the adhesive as a way to anchor bookmarks. That eventually led to Post-it notes, and they were yellow simply because that's what paper he had in his office. Well, the idea was a hit. Although 3M's patent expired in 1997, Post-it and the original yellow color are still registered company trademarks. Sticky notes are made by 3M and now many other companies. Microsoft added the concept to Windows 7 in 2009. It was cute, but it was no more useful than paper notes. In some ways, the electronic version was less useful because the notes disappeared when the computer was turned off, unlike Post-it notes that stuck around. Literally. So fast forward 15 years to 2024. Microsoft updated its Sticky Notes app and linked it to OneNote, a key component of the Microsoft 365 Office suite. Suddenly, the notes aren't limited to just the computer, and you can work with them even when the computer is turned off because they're visible in OneNote on Apple phones, Apple tablets, and Android phones. Until recently, I had ignored sticky notes on Windows because it wasn't very helpful. Now that the notes carry over to my Windows tablet, iPad, and Android phone, it's another helpful utility that I can't live without. All right, that's a little bit of hyperbole. I probably would survive just fine without it, but it is surprisingly useful. Sticky Notes is poised to become even more useful. A new version is available to current channel preview users running OneNote on Windows version 2402 or later. Microsoft has not announced when it will be generally available, although it'll probably be soon. The first couple of screenshots you see on the TechBiter Worldwide website are from the older version. When you have the new version of Sticky Notes and you search for STI, you'll see two entries, one marked New. That will be the one you want, and if you leave it open when you power the computer off, it will launch again when you start Windows. If you're a member of the Insider program, or even if you're not, you can read about the new version on the Microsoft 365 website. I have a link on the TechBiter Worldwide website. One clever new feature remembers the application that was open when you created a note or captured a screenshot. If you decide you don't want that feature, you can turn it off. When you revisit the document or the website, Sticky Notes displays the relevant notes. This feature doesn't always work quite as intended for documents on the computer, but the source is a clickable link if you copied text or took a screenshot on a website. Yes, I did say screenshot. When you select the screenshot option, Sticky Notes captures the window of whatever application is in use. There aren't any options to capture just part of the application, as you find in a dedicated screen capture application, such as Snagit. Maybe it'll come later to the Windows Sticky Notes app. The new version has the same limited options for text formatting as before: bold, italic, underline, strike-through, and bullets. The notes can be any of seven colors. An extra feature has been added to open notes. The user can resize them. It's also possible to pin sticky notes to the desktop, so it's always on top. I haven't yet decided whether I like that option, but I'm leaning toward liking it. If you'd prefer not to give it so much screen real estate, you can always open sticky notes by pressing the Windows key, Alt, and S. Right-clicking any note offers options to copy the note, delete it, or change the color. There's a search icon at the top of the app, but I hope Microsoft adds the ability to drag notes up and down and to pin notes to a specific location. As it is, the notes are sorted by creation date, with the most recent notes at the top. Even if you don't yet have access to the new Sticky Notes app, now would be a good time to experiment with the older version to see if there are ways to work this handy little app into your workflow. The thought of a phony email address may seem a little questionable, but it's easily the best way to avoid giving your real address to somebody you may not want to have it. Consider this. You see an ad for something on the internet. You're interested, but you've never heard of the company. You could sign up for their newsletter, but they might not stop sending messages if you decide you're no longer interested, or they could sell your address to spammers and scammers. Well, that's one reason to use DuckDuckGo email protection. It's a free email forwarding service that removes multiple layers of hidden email trackers and lets you create an unlimited number of unique private email addresses on the fly, makes your existing email account and inbox more private. It doesn't matter what kind of email account you have, Gmail, Outlook, Apple, Proton, or your own private IMAP or POP3 account. There are two kinds of Duck accounts. Consider one your primary account, and you'll have an address something like yourname@duck.com. Any message sent to that address will be stripped of tracking information and instantly forwarded to your standard email address. The other is for one-time addresses you can generate for a specific sender, and it'll look something like a bunch of random characters at duck.com. Messages sent to that address will also be stripped of tracking information and instantly forwarded to your standard email address. If the sender turns out to be unreliable or unwanted, you can simply delete the address. Having an address you can instantly turn off without affecting your real email account is helpful, but some users will appreciate the tracker removal even more. What I mean by trackers is the method used by a sender to determine when you view the message. This technology can also report what kind of device you use to view the message and other bits of information. The TechBiter newsletter, which is sent by MailChimp, includes such a tracker. It lets me know what percentage of recipients opened the message. That's useful information, but I can understand why some people won't like that. Google, Axiom, SendinBlue, SMTP2Go, and most other mailing services use this technique. When you install the DuckDuckGo Privacy Essentials extension in your browser, it automatically detects email fields and gives users the option to generate a unique duck address for protection against email address profiling. Security Essentials can show information about the website, such as its name, whether the connection is encrypted, and what potential trackers are being blocked. The illustration you'll see on the TechBiter Worldwide website shows the results for my website and for the New York Times. You can also instantly generate a new email address that is copied to the buffer on the device. That's handy if there's an email subscription option. Note that the extension is compatible with Firefox and Chrome-based browsers, and that includes Microsoft's Edge browser, but I have been unable to get it to work with Edge, and Duck support has been unable to help. The extension works properly with all of the other browsers I use and with both Android and Apple mobile devices, so it's probably a flaw in my specific installation of Edge. Security Essentials and Duck email addresses are free, but you'll also be encouraged to sign up for Privacy Pro, $10 a month. That's a service that includes a virtual private network, a service that attempts to remove your personal information online, and assistance if your identity is ever stolen. There are no tricks, not even any requirement to opt out to avoid signing up. If you want the pro version, you have to actively seek it out. For more information, to download Security Essentials, or to sign up for email forwarding, visit the DuckDuckGo website. There's a link from the TechBiter Worldwide website. Thanks for listening to TechBiter Worldwide. I'm Bill Blinn. There's more on the website, techbiter.com, and if you have a question or a comment, use the contact link you'll find there. Stop by again next week for another session.